And the Senate Democrats yesterday. I know her.
Maybe I do, but
Penny?
Is this you?
The House Committee on Revenue will come to order. Colleagues, we're going to take things out of order a bit in order to accommodate our colleagues, and we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1558. Mazza?
Chair Bonhart and members of the committee, the Senate Bill 1558 comes to you from your counterpart in the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. This is a bill about revenue bonds. These are conduit revenue bonds, and those revenue bonds are intended to be administered and issued under the watch and supervision of the Business Oregon, Oregon Economic Development. And the way they are structured in this language, they have no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issues. I think we have Senator.
Questions for staff? These are conduit bonds.
Yes.
Right, and they fall under the general rubric of the feds giving us an allowance. So many bonds a year, and we spend it. But we're not liable for repayment. They're essentially revenue bonds.
That is correct.
Okay.
The state is not on the hook for repayments of the bonds, right. Although, I mean...
Okay. Senator, thank you so much for coming.
Well, co-chairs and members of the committee, thanks for having me. And I am Chris Telfer, the senator from sunny Central Oregon. Although I hear it's raining there and it's sunny here, so I'm a little confused. And Representative Barnhart, you just gave some of my speech. So I just wanted to kind of establish what the bill does and why. And there are a number of people here from the Treasurer's Office, from Business Oregon, and from Economic Development people that can address some of the specifics. But currently, industrial revenue bonds in this state are issued, the proceeds of which can be used to purchase or acquire fixed assets, buildings, and equipment. Not a lot of job creation there. There are a handful of states around the country that have a little bit more scope, broader scope in the use of the proceeds, and so we're trying to be competitive with those states as far as acquiring new businesses and helping existing businesses grow. And so what this bill does is it broadens the scope to include not only the acquisition of fixed assets, but research and development, where real job creation is, as well as some working capital for a number of years on the acquisition of those assets. So it's a little bit more flexibility in the use of the funds. This has been a collaborative effort, sat around the table with our bond counsel, Treasurer's Office, the Governor's Office, the Department of Justice, and Business Oregon, and kind of worked through this bill. And again, I think it's another tool in the toolbox of economic development. And what we're trying to do is be competitive with other states, give some flexibility in the use of these revenue bonds, and a reminder that individuals like these revenue bonds, industrial revenue bonds, they could do commercial paper if they wanted to, but the advantage of an industrial revenue bond is another set of eyes looks at the project and pretty much gives it its blessing. So with that, I'm happy to answer any other questions or allow you to listen to all the detail offerings to follow.
Other questions? Representative Berger.
You may not. Thank you, Senator Telfer. You may not be the one to answer this, and so you're not on the hook. But I'm curious where and how it is that Central Oregon is central here. I mean, does the bill specify?
Well, because that happens to be where I live.
I know that, but where does the bill say Central Oregon?
The bill doesn't.
That's what I thought.
There was a catalyst of a company that had shown some interest in Central Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And with some job creation. But this bill is not directed at Central Oregon. It's all of Oregon.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to get on the
right.
record. Okay, thank you. I know that's where you live, and I know this is your bill. But I'm trying to say, wait a minute.
Well, one and one equals two.
I got it.
Spoken like a CPA.
Well, yeah. I don't know. As a CPA, you probably would say, well, what do you want it to say?
I want it to say that it's good for all of Oregon, and it is specifically targeted for you to find ways to help Central Oregon.
Right.
Great. Other questions, comments? Senator. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, the lines 17 to 21, those are in the alternative, right? A capital asset or research and development or operating expenses. It's not all three.
Yes, correct.
Thank you.
Representative Benz, the bill was amended in the Senate, and the amendment, when it became engrossed, the discussion about the ideas of what is operating capital and research and development and so on was tightened into the bill, if you will. So these lines were redefined within that amendment.
That's interesting.
Since the conjunction isn't there, is it? Is that a drafting error?
I'm sorry?
The conjunction's not there. You know, if it were done in the normal way, there'd be a comma after asset, a comma after Oregon, and then the word or.
Mr. Co-Chair, I believe that Business Oregon has the sideboards on overseeing this, and they can probably answer some of these questions better than I.
Okay.
I would also like to mention that in the amendment, the other thing that we did was ensure that the proceeds of those bonds are utilized in the state of Oregon. So there's substantial investment within the state of Oregon.
Right. And that's the sub-B part. I did note, and I'm really pleased that you put that in there, that the new battery plant, and that's not quite right. The new component plant that's being built in Albany is being built with substantial help from the University of Washington and an economic development program that I, the name of which I didn't recognize, in the state of Washington. We're perfectly happy, of course, to have Washington help us out with a plant in Albany, but I did think that was a bit unusual. You've taken care of that problem with
yes.
with this language.
Right. We will not be building in Washington.
We will not be building in Washington. Thank you. Anything else for the senator? Thank you. I'm sorry.
Not necessarily for the senator, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead and raise it, and it may be somebody else. Yeah.
Just a word that's new to me in the description of the effective committee amendment, illegible. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that. I'm guessing from the context this is something that could be included. Is that right?
Eligible?
Last.
It means eligible.
I think that's probably
a typo,
eligible.
Perhaps.
Okay.
No, not necessarily the legal language.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. We have two people who are signed up who are from more than 100 miles away, so let's talk to them first. John Stark, Linda Cavalli-Nelson. And is there someone here from Business Oregon and the Treasurer's Office who wants to talk about this? It would be nice if we had someone from the Treasurer's Office that also was okay. Please, go ahead.
Thank you, committee co-chairs and members of the committee here. I am John Stark. I am manager for Redmond Economic Development. We're a satellite office for economic development for Central Oregon, although a separate corporation managed by a separate board of directors, which is why you have two written testimonies from two separate operations before you today. Thank you for the opportunity to expedite our testimony here today. It was an interesting pass, as we've had throughout the year, so we really appreciate your prioritization of the schedule today. Most of my written testimony that you have before you is about a project. I don't want to focus on that today. I want to focus on competitiveness for Oregon. And I speak on behalf of the state because this particular bill is also on OEDA, Oregon Economic Development Association's radar as well. And with that, as you may know, Oregon is a leading manufacturer of technology, high technology companies, semiconductors, renewable energy products manufacturing here in the area. And if we want to continue to aspire to attracting future developments and investment here, we've got to be able to compete with states like Texas, Michigan, as well as Washington, D.C., and Arizona, who are offering the use of industrial revenue bonds for working capital and R&D. And so while we have an opportunity that has presented this this use of industrial revenue bonds to us, we believe that this really brings, as the senator put it, a new tool. I'm a fisherman, so I'll call it a new lure in our tackle box. And I just came back from the medical device show in Anaheim, California. We were on a recruiting effort for Oregon. And with that, many of these companies start as R&D companies. And they've got to be able to put that capital to the ground used to create jobs, and we'd like to see it happen here. We'd appreciate your support. I'll keep my testimony short today. I really appreciate it. I'm happy to answer any questions before turning it over to my colleague.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. Thank you for your time. My name is Linda Cavalli-Nelson of Smith Rock Resources, also in Redmond. I guess you could say it's a little bit my fault that you're here. I had the opportunity to lobby for Oregon as a location for a technology company that's currently located in that other state to the south, of which I was until recently a member. I married into the state recently, so I'm now a loyal Oregonian. But again, this isn't about a particular opportunity, even though that's what catalyzed this, and Senator Telfer did a fabulous job. I mean, it was new for me, having come from a very large, not very accessible state, to see how amazingly accessible and responsive the officials, the EDCO people, Senator Telfer, and members of Business Oregon have been. I mean, it's really amazing and so refreshing. But I really want to talk to you as a former economic development person. I did work in economic development for that other state at one point, and then investment banking. So I kind of have a perspective from both sides, both the economic development side and the finance side. And I may be repeating information that you already know, but where this program started was as a tax-exempt program that was overseen by the IRS. So some of the language came from the federal statutes that were tax-related. So understandably, if you want to get a tax deduction, you need to have a capital asset. Now, the taxable bond programs grew out of those tax-exempt programs. And most states did what was expedient, just kind of copied the language over, even though there really was no reason to have these restrictions that the investment be limited to capital assets. But it just happened, and nobody really stopped to say, well, is this really what we want to do? So when this opportunity came up, as John mentioned, if you want to attract a high-tech, high-growth company, they need R&D, and they need working capital. And those are the hardest types of capital to get. But those are the types of companies you really want to attract, and Oregon has done a great job in that area. And I think I saw a figure that the average high-tech job in Oregon pays a wage that's 119% higher than a non-high-tech job. But anyway, when we started visiting whether we could attract this particular technology company to Oregon, we ran into this restriction in the statutes. And both bond councils that we spoke with said, yeah, those restrictions don't need to be there, but they are there. And so there was a pretty universal support to remove them. Let me emphasize, with these taxable programs, these aren't bonds that are going to be sold to Grandma and Grandpa Jones. They're private placements, which can only be purchased by very sophisticated investors who do their own due diligence. These bonds are non-recourse to the state. In this case, this particular technology company, they have an investor who's already committed to the funds, who has their own bond counsel and has done their own due diligence. So there's really no risk. There's no additional exposure. The investor provides full indemnification to the state. And as a backup, you have Business Oregon, who reviews every bond application and can set their own administrative rules, and you can put in there whatever you want, and the state still has the opportunity to say, no, this isn't the type of investment we want. So really, all you're doing with this bill is removing a restriction to give you the flexibility to allow this to be used to attract a company that you want to have here. You still have the control through Business Oregon and the administrative rules to say, no, we don't approve this application, but you have the flexibility, for example, in this instance that we've been working on, to allow a company to use the conduit authority to use the financing that, again, they're bringing through a private source to grow the company and create jobs. So hopefully that helped provide some clarification. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Questions?
Just a welcome to Oregon.
Thank you very much.
And we're glad to have another convert. And I've spent some time in Sacramento. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think about the reality that in Oregon, Senator Telfer represents about 130,000 souls. In California, a state senator represents more than 500,000. And that's one of the, well, I don't want to make excuses for California, but that does make that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked when the senator called me herself and said, what can I do? So it's really good to make
one other difference, of course, is that we do not have term limits. So there are people actually who can actually learn how to do their jobs here.
I'm happy to be here.
Any other comments, questions for this panel? Thank you. I really appreciate the explanation that kind of brings us up to date, because I didn't have all of that history.
Good,
appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Does now we do have the letter, and my question did get answered. We do have the letter from Michael Salvaggio for the state treasurer, indicating that the treasurer is happy with the bill. Business Oregon want to be heard?
They'll answer questions.
They'll answer. Do we have any questions for Business Oregon? And I think they plan to do their normal due diligence on these projects as they come up. And I think a head nod works for that. Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else who wants to be heard today on Senate Bill 1558? This is probably your last chance. I don't see anybody rushing forward. With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1588 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1558. I misspoke. We're closing the public hearing on 1558 and opening a work session on Senate Bill 1558.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1558 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves Senate Bill 1558 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? We will note that this is the A version of the bill.
1558A.
Yeah. Is there any discussion? Any objection to the motion? I don't see any objection. Representative Gelser is excused. With that, the motion carries. Who would like to carry the bill? Representative Wand will carry.
Sure.
Thank you. And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1558. Now, let's see. We are not ready yet on 77. Should we go to... yes, we'll open the work session on House Bill 4005. And is that yours?
No. Christine.
Oh, Christine. Okay. Yeah. Christine? We have an amendment on this one, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Go ahead. Tell us about it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4005, as amended by the A4, the amendment actually removes cougars from the list of predators for which livestock owners may be compensated. And the bill as a whole provides a compensation program for those who can have their livestock killed by wolves and have those kills subsequently confirmed. The amendment also requires ODFW to administer the compensation program and limits this compensation to $15,000 per year. The measure establishes a sunset of the compensation program for the tax year before January 1st, 2019, and only for animals killed after June 30th, 2018. It establishes the sunset also at any point in which the wolf is removed from the Oregon Endangered Species List. B, there is a revenue impact of the measure. It's assumed that in 2012, the full amount of $15,000 will not be compensated quite, but by 2013-15 and 2015-17, the revenue impacts would be $30,000 in those biennia, because that the limit would be reached for the compensable kills. I should note that we have another purpose statement, and this is something I was emailing about earlier in order to sort of vet ahead of time. But what it reads at this point is, the purpose of this legislation is to provide ranchers and farmers fair compensation for kills of their livestock, cattle, sheep, goats, and other ungulates, by wolves, while wolves are protected by the state's endangered species listing or any other administrative rule. So that is how it reads at this point. That could still possibly be changed a little bit as it goes on to ways and means. So keep in mind there is that possibility. The A4 amendment also restores the refundability of the tax credit. So for individual income taxpayers, but not corporate taxpayers, if the compensable kills exceed the amount of tax liability that person has, they may receive a refund in that. And it should be noted, you'll note a change in the fiscal impact statement. Previously, the Department of Revenue had estimated almost $100,000 in one-time costs to administer that refundable credit, but after further discussion, they have decided they could administer it similar to a claim of right tax credit. And essentially what that means is they don't keep track of the individuals who receive the tax credit, but the thinking is that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife would keep track of that in their administration of this as they certify these compensable kills. So the expenditure impact, therefore, has gone to minimal because they would be able to administer it as a claim of right tax credit. It should be noted that occasionally that can cause a flag for an audit or a review of the individual's tax return. So this is not the perfect solution, but it could cause delays in individual's tax returns, potentially. But that was the option that was less expensive for administering this refundable tax credit. And I think that's about all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Colleagues, what's your wish? Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that House... We need to amend House... I would like to move the A4 amendment to House Bill 4005.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves the A4 amendment, the dash A4 amendment to House Bill 4005. Discussion? I will simply note that this contains the terms that I identified as the kinds of issues that we needed to deal with to set some sideboards on this tax credit, so that there would be a very clear delineation of what it would cost to have this credit. And I think that all of the suggestions that I made about what ought to be in here are in fact in here. As I understand it, this amendment was actually prepared at the request of Representative Jensen after that conversation. So that's the history of it. Is there any other discussion on the A4s? Any objection to the A4? No objection. A4s. Motion's adopted. Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2004 as amended without...
4005.
I mean, 4005 with as amended without recommendation to the House floor, with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
By prior reference.
By prior reference.
Thank you. Senator Representative Berger moves House Bill 4005 as amended to the House floor without recommendation, and with the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. If you might permit a brief howl of
please.
Protest
oh, that's
on this.
Cute.
I have no issue with compensating landowners for these kills, livestock owners. I supported the creation of the wolf, the compensation fund that we created last time around. I also understand that things in this body are sometimes much less than linear in how they proceed through the process. And I also understand that this is being moved without recommendation. Nevertheless, I think this sets a very unfortunate precedent. We have worked very hard as a committee over my time in the legislature and before that to bring our tax credit system under control. And as we did that rigorous work, we have done things like changing portions of what used to be the business energy tax credit from a tax credit to a grant. We have done things to change the film and video credit to more of a grant mechanism. We have established accountability and sideboards. And in my mind, although this is a very small amount of money in the revenue code, it is a direct move away from this process. We have a fund already created that we could fund, and instead we are creating an inefficient mechanism for compensation that costs the state more in administration than it will, than the benefit that it will provide to these landowners and the livestock owners. And I think this is an unfortunate measure at the end of session. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Thank you. I'll restate. Okay, Representative Berger.
Yes, let me just say that I share my JTAX co-chair's issues around another this type of tax credit. It is minute as tax credit goes, as he will, and it has a limitation on it. It also addresses a very particular and peculiar problem in a very particular and peculiar part of Oregon, and I think moving it without recommendation is appropriate for this committee, and I made the motion, but I appreciate the howl from my co-chair.
Yes, Representative.
Yeah. And I share most of Co-Vice Chair Bailey's concerns and have joined him in trying our best to control these tax credits. There are, I'm not sure I would join Madam Co-Chair in calling Northeastern Oregon peculiar, but since it's not my district, perhaps Representative
it
Jensen.
It is peculiar in that there are wolves there.
It is.
there aren't any in my neighborhood.
There is, I think, caught up in this, what I'm going to say, a self-affecting sunset, and that is that these wolves, if we chose to count the wolves that were in Idaho as part of the group that we now enjoy, they would not be endangered because there would be close to 3,000 of them. But we choose to look at the line artificial as it is to the wolves and as though it is real, and thus we only count 20 or 30. But I'm sure there will be more. And then when they're removed from the endangered species list, which I believe they will be, they already have been from the federal list. They've already been delisted federally in that area of Oregon. This tax credit will end. So there is a built-in sunset, which all too soon will be upon us, because I think we'll have more wolves. So that's all I have to say about this particular bill.
Thank you. Other comments? I think we better. Representative Gelser.
Yes, I just wanted to say I will be voting yes on this without recommendation, but reserve the right to change my vote on the floor.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And you understand that the motion before us is to send this bill to the floor without recommendation and with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. That's the motion. Please call the roll.
Representative Sam.
Aye.
Gelser.
Aye.
Reed.
Aye.
Vaughn.
Aye.
Bailey.
No.
Brewer.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barnhart.
Aye.
Co-Chair Berger.
Aye.
Motion carries. The bill goes on to Ways and Means. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4005. We're ready on 75, are we? Are we ready on 75? Do we have what we need? Yeah, but we have some amendments. Okay, we'll open the work session on House Bill 4175. And colleagues, I'll tell you that my pause here is that we have another amendment coming on 77, and so we may have to take a recess depending upon on the timing of getting here, but we want to get these out this afternoon if it's the committee's pleasure to do so. So we're on 4175, Matson.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, the 4175, I think in your packet today, is probably grew a little more sizable than the last time around. So you have a couple papers here. The first one, you have a background from the statutes that exist, and it's called Background in House Bill 4175. Those are three pages that include some statutory language that are included in your packet. And then you would have the -1, -2, and -3 amendments, along with all their fiscal impacts and SMSs. And I have just received the fiscal impacts for -3, and I will be passing it to you momentarily. But let me...
Could you tell us the difference between these three amendments?
I can.
Because they look really very similar.
I'm trying to...
Well, the differences are kind of subtle.
Okay. I figured that much.
The -1 amendment is the amendment that we were discussing last meeting.
Yes.
Now, out of the last meeting, we had few questions coming out about the availability of the different of the different funds to different uses. And before I go into that, the -2 and -3, let me just say why we put these statutes and their citation for you here. It is basically to, we consulted with council and with the other authorities on how these funds would be used, if possible, by any other use than what is mentioned here. And the four citations of the four different statutes that you have here, starting in 293-560, this basically, and this page, this one starts with where the money from the federal government for the forest reserves comes in and how it is divided between counties. And basically it says that it's almost proportional to the amount of forests that exist in each county. And that's why you end up with money going to 33 out of the 36 counties, because you have the land mass within each county getting a piece of the funds. The second one, 294.0660, goes into the process of how you divide these monies. And in the first line, you see how the division comes to be 75% to the road fund and 25% to the school fund of the county. Now, this money that is the 75% is specified later on in 2, 3, and then 1 and 4 for different counties in the east of the, what they call east of the summit of the Cascade Mountains, saying if some of this money would be left over and the counties choose to move that money to the school funds, then it is doable and under certain conditions. And the conditions usually are on the population and the amount left, which specifies which counties do that. Now, all of this is being said for in two places, for the east and one place for the west. However, it specifies that the 25% that goes to the school fund, these are not to be part of that discussion. In other words, the 25% that goes to the school fund goes through the equalization formula. This goes into the school funding formula and so on. So these are, in this sense, is by the statute are untouchable.
And this mezzanine is under 294060?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you would have in the 368705, you have the county fund road. That's where the definition of the 75% where they go to. That's where the county fund road, the money that being received from that 75%. And then, well, it specifies it is, you know, the federal money, the state money, and other monies that come in.
Right. So just to make sure I understand, in 060, the 294060, the statute you've got here, if a county is east of the mountains and has a population of 6,500 or less, that county could choose to transfer more than 25% into the school fund if it chose to do that.
If they have more money into the road fund and they choose right. to do that, they have they the could. Right to do it.
And if they did that, that money would not be considered in the apportionment from the state school fund.
That is correct. That okay. would not be counted now, against the county right. in the equalization formula.
Right. Now, if the county is west of the Cascade Summit and has a population of less than 19,500 but more than 6,500, then it's handled in a slightly different way. But again, it has to do with...
It could still
it has
move
to do with
money.
Moving money into the school fund, not out of it.
Right.
Right.
So it could move the money and still cannot be used
right.
against...
It doesn't allow... But neither one of these allow money to be moved out of the school fund.
Right.
Okay.
All the provisions are allowing money to that is above and beyond the 25%. Right. Basically, yeah. any part of the 75%, yeah. if it's extra, to be used right. into the school fund without affecting the school formula.
Right. This looks like a little sausage making here, but it might be effective for what we're working on.
Well, Mr. Chair, I did ask... Legislative Council and made sure that, you know, if there is a very smart attorney, that didn't come out right. That's not what I meant.
Yeah. Yes, all attorneys are smart.
On the,
why are you going to use it?
My apologies. That's not what I meant. if there is a smart attorney who's able to convince a judge that these things are could be done otherwise, and if this is not an ironclad separation, if that possibility exists, and I was assured again that this is probably not doable. So there is no ability or.
Mazen, are you suggesting that even the smartest attorney in the universe, which would be Representative Hicks, would not be able to find a way to divert the money to the road fund?
Of course, Representative Hicks could find a way, but... Yes, that's what I'm suggesting.
Mazen, I hate to interrupt
yes.
this, but I can't tell the difference between the dash 2 and the dash 3.
Okay, the dash 2 and the dash 3, Co-Chair Berger... If you see the section 4, the difference between the dash 2 and 3 is the slight injection into the line 4 of that page to describe what monies that they could loan the enforcement, the patrol...
The money.
Meaning you had few conditions going on. First, you have to have money coming to you from the federal government. Then the second one, once that happens, you could loan from the county funds.
The words are the same.
They look exactly
the
same.
Words are identical.
I figured identity. Out the difference.
What's the difference?
It's in line 12. I feel like I was doing a word puzzle here. One requires repayment in 2 years, one in three years.
There it is.
That's two and three. One and two are... I'm sorry. I'm still in one and two.
Oh, she asked about two and three.
Okay. Sure, you were going to get there.
I was going to get.
This is a torture thing by mail.
The one and two is specified that the loan comes.
He has to have his pleasures somehow.
Yeah.
You know?
Can't wait.
One way or another.
The loan only comes from the federal funds and not from the road funds that are state funded. That's the difference between one and two. So it is restricted to only the monies that are coming through the federal grants. Okay, the two and three is the repayment in two or 3 years.
Oh, yeah, it's the described, yeah.
And the way that this works, actually, this is on the request of the counties.
Yeah.
And primarily, we were discussing that the actual process, if the budget happens, and this has to be budgeted, so it happens before the budget, then you do have a whole year for the county budget and then 2 years for payment. So in actuality, you have 3 years in the first one, and when you inject 3 years for the prepayment, you actually have 4 years for the repayment. So that's where these differences exist.
Thank you. Representative Hicks, did you want to be heard on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm Co-Chair.
And please ignore all the comments about lawyers.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Hicks, Josephine County. Happen to know the co-chair was a lawyer in his dark, distant past. I won't share the other details if they don't know.
That's probably just as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
That'll be our inside secret. Thank you for hearing this bill and for considering this bill. This bill is very close to the bill that was considered by the committee last session when Sheriff Gilbertson from Josephine County came and gave a presentation that outlined in stark terms the implications of what would happen if this kind of latitude is not available to Josephine County. To refresh some recollections, currently in Josephine County, we have a patrol in the rural areas. Josephine County is about 1,060 acres, so it's a large tract. In the rural areas, the patrol goes out about 20 hours a day. Without this funding, the patrol will be dropped down to at most 8 hours and potentially as low as zero. So in stark terms, this is the difference potentially and probably, as one county commissioner put it to me, between having patrol and not having patrol. The importance of that cannot be overstated. You know, if we don't have county patrol, then there's only one layer of law enforcement left. It's the state, and we know who pays for that. So good bill should pass on a lot of levels. Makes a lot of sense. It's good long-term planning. I want to articulate something I was not able to say last time, which is that there is going to be a public safety levy going out from the county commissioners. They have committed publicly to put out a public safety levy in May that would, in theory, reduce the burden and some of the pressure should it pass on our local law enforcement. So between the levy and having at least the latitude to consider this type of short-term funding source, I think that's gonna work for Josephine County. So thank you again, and I welcome questions.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Hicks? Yes, Representative Berger.
I'm only the -3 amendment gives this extra time for repayment. Is that from your office or from the counties? From the counties because of the need. I see nodding back there, and you have no objection to the -3 amendments?
Madam Co-Chair, no, I don't. And having just seen them now, I'm reading it as a May. So I think some counties want the latitude to have it be alone, and I certainly have no objection to that.
We heard two county commissioners from Curry County this morning in the Joint Committee on County Payments, and it was clear that Curry County wanted the option to be available. And as I understand it, Mazen, you correct me if I've missed this, this bill would allow either the county to use the money from this fund without any repayment, to put it in the budget for the purposes of the patrol, or under Section 4 and 5, they could borrow the money and repay it in accordance with the terms of Section 5.
Well, Mr. Chair, let me do another recovery on that one, too.
All right. If I've got it wrong, I want to know.
Well, last time, I think I mentioned that it was a loan, and I think Legislative Council mentioned it was a loan or a direct thing. And actually, it is a hybrid of the two. These five counties that you have in the first page.
Six
counties.
I mean.
These have the option of getting the direct payment until the sunset date. Okay. The rest of the counties have the option of doing the loan money. Okay, but that the direct payment is only open for these six counties for that time only.
Okay, and those counties and any other county could do what it says in Section 4 and 5.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's a great restatement. Anything else? Representative Berger?
Are we in work session?
We are. We are in work session.
Yep. It is a work session.
Okay. It is a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the -3 amendments to House Bill 4175.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 4175. Discussion? Any objection to the -3? Seeing no objection, the motion carries.
Mr. Chair,
I
move House Bill 4175 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves House Bill 4175 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Yes, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be supporting this bill. I think the county should have the option to be able to address the needs that are specific to their counties with the various tools that they have available to them. I will, at the risk of getting slightly off topic, say that I think that counties in general.
Okay. Go ahead. I've just discovered that the form of the motion is in error because the bill has to go to Ways and Means as a prior reference.
Maybe I'll finish my comments
please.
And we can change that motion.
Please go ahead.
Counties in general ought to have the tools that they need to be able to manage their budgets, and that counties across this state are struggling. And it is continual frustration of mine that we have preemptions on revenue options at the county level that would allow my county to be able to serve the needs of its citizens in the same way that counties across the state need options to be able to move money around and to be able to serve the needs of their citizens. So I hope we will continue to take a look at the big picture.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I complete my motion?
Berger, restate her motion.
My motion is that I move House Bill 4175 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves House Bill 4175 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Now, is there any other discussion? Does that change anybody's ideas about this? there are Ways and Means issues, obviously, in this bill, but also it does mean that we might actually have a chance of getting it through both floors before the end of the session. Okay, is there any objection to the motion? Silence. No objection to the motion. Motion carries. The bill goes to Ways and Means. We'll close the work session on House Bill 4175. Paul, where are we on the paperwork on 77?
We have the amendment. We can distribute that to
you. Okay, so we'll open a work session on House Bill 4177, and we're still waiting for the fiscal. So let's go ahead and do as much as we can, and if we have to take a recess, we will.
This one, too, has a subsequent referral.
Yep.
When you turned, who's going to carry, that's when I lost it.
Yeah.
I didn't look at my agenda.
Well, I didn't either. So.
I didn't look at my agenda. It was right there.
Yep.
That had it there.
That's fine.
because I'm not positive now.
You want, Paul, do you have someone to explain the amendment to us? Okay. I think I know what it says, but that's because I asked you for it.
We've got counsel.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I do know what we requested, and we do have the author here, too, so.
Okay.
The 4177-4 amendments are designed to deal with an issue where there is, this is the CAFA distribution formula from 4177. And what the, this is designed to deal with a situation in which a county is decertified from assessing property not meeting the standards as outlined by Department of Revenue. Now, the way current statute is, the CAFA revenue that goes through the funding and distributed by the department to the counties around the state, that money would go back into the formula and be distributed to the other 35 counties with the, minus the amount for the decertified county. What this is designed to do is to allow the Department of Revenue to retain that money that would have gone to the decertified county and use it to mitigate some of the costs because they would be responsible for the actual assessment for the bill, so for the property in the county. So that was the intent. We have John Phillips is here, and he hasn't had much time to see it either, but and then we also have Gordon here.
So the first part of this amendment is the same as the amendment that we've seen before.
The first part of the amendment, yes. This is the dash dash 3 amendment.
Right.
With it, so the dash 3 is included in this. This is as a single amendment.
Right. And then the new piece really makes certain that the department has available to it the money that would otherwise flow through the CAFA to the county and would be able to use that money then to administer the program that it's required to administer at that point, if I understand the amendment correctly.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if you look at the bottom of page 2,
right,
where it addresses the issue that the amount that would have been paid to the county under the subsection based on those expenditures shall be transferred to the assessment and taxation account.
And I assume 306.125 describes what happens at the department, and that account is part of that.
Right. The department administers that account, and this would allow them to retain it.
Okay. Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips, the Department of Revenue. Just seeing this for the first time, and I had to look at to see what 306.125 was, but if Paul says that's the account we spend money out of, then I'm sure Paul would be telling the absolute truth. And that was the point of the amendment, was to say that if a county is distressed to the extent that it's looking like we might have some counties, we are required under 308.062 to step in and perform some functions that are required by law for the appraisal and assistance. I think I've talked to you about this the other day. And the funds that are available to us are the shared revenue funds, and they would be a small amount of money, insufficient really to cover any substantial task that might need to be done. This would supplement our ability to actually provide those functions. It looks like the department is just trying to get more money to do something, but really I think what we talked about before is that we would be probably hiring county staff. This money would stay in the county. It would be helpful to get those assessments made, those appraisals made, and those taxes collected in that county. So that's the purpose of this. We're not really sure where all this is going to go. We hope that everything will come together and no county will be in this situation, but if they are, it will help those taxing districts that are relying on that money in that county.
Okay. And I think Elsie is here. Could you, would you mind coming up and giving us a sense of...
He's got 306.
Of this, and he's got 306. Also, there's an additional question that's come up about the capacity of the county to accept a contribution from a private party or another taxing district to help them with the budget to actually accomplish the purposes of the assessment and taxation, and whether that's either legal under existing law or whether we'd have to amend this bill in order to allow it to become legal.
Thank you, Co-Chair Barnhart, Gordon Howard, Legislative Council. Regarding your question regarding the voluntary contributions, we found nothing in the statute that would prevent a local district from volunteering contributions towards the collection of the collection of taxes functioned by a county, so it was not necessary to put up a specific statutory authorization for that.
Great, thank you. And then if you could address sort of the way this is put together and how it works, that would be quite helpful, I think.
Thank you, Co-Chair Barnhart. The section we looked at that needed amendment to implement this concept is ORS 294.178, and under the current statute, it took a little while to unravel the computation that's called for in the statute currently. But as we understand it, the CAFA funds are distributed to each county based upon the counties that have their expenditures certified by the department on a proportional basis. Under the current language, if a county submitted expenditures and that was rejected for some various reason, essentially the money from CAFA was then divided up among the other counties who did comply. The point of the amendments are to amend the sections where it is relevant so that when a county has submitted an expenditures proposal and the Department of Revenue has, for various reasons, rejected it, those are paragraphs C, D, and E under subsection 4 of 294.178. Under those circumstances, that those expenditures are still put into the calculation, but the money that would have gone to the county instead would go into this assessment and taxation county account of the Department of Revenue and used for the purposes that Mr. Phillips described. And then finally, the most complicated matter of this was subsection 5 of the original statute, which talked about a situation where a county was certified and then in a later fiscal quarter essentially didn't meet its obligations. And so in amending that, we decided the best thing to do in this situation is just to take out the very complicated language was there and just say it will be reallocated based upon the method of calculation in the previous subsection. So that's the guts of the amendment.
Yes, please.
Mr. Co-Chair, John Phillips again, the Department of Revenue. As I read again 306.125, I'm not convinced that that is the place where this money is going that we'll have access to. I haven't had a chance to see it before, but as I look at it now, if it's going into the, I'm not 100% sure that that's the correct place for it. So I guess I'm going to need a few minutes to.
Well, I'm wondering if that isn't a Ways and Means issue, because they're the experts on which fund flows into which other fund. Our job here is, of course, is to decide on the policy, and I think this bill probably does that. Or at least the Dash 4 as amended. But we don't have the paperwork yet, do we, for the Dash 4. So I think this may be the appropriate time for us to recess, let you look at it a little bit more and figure out where you think we are on it. Colleagues, don't run off, because we may be back any minute when we get the materials from LFO. Do you want to say 2:30? Okay. Well, we'll recess and now and reconvene at 2:30, but be prepared to take a message in the event that we need to delay a little longer than that. With that, the committee is in recess. Committee will come back to order. When we left, we were in a work session on House Bill 4177, and colleagues, 2:30 came very quickly. It turns out that just as we recessed, the paperwork, what we call fiscal light, arrived basically saying that the fiscal impact will be determined at the Ways and Means Committee. And that's fine with us, because that's where it should be determined anyway. Mr. Phillips, did you have a chance to have any further thoughts on the issue you raised?
Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. John Phillips again with the Department of Revenue. Yes, Gordon did point out, and with some assistance from the back of the room, it does look like that is the account we would spend the money out of, so I appreciate that. I just a little bit nervous about it. There is another concern I want to raise, just so it's on the table, and then it does look like on the very last page where it talks about in lines 3 through 8, page 3, for example, it talks about the expenditures of a county that does not make its appropriations based on certified, and then it goes on to say not included in the program. What we're concerned about is if there are expenditures of a county that are not allowed to participate in the grant program, those expenditures might be very low compared to what they would had they been participating in the program. So we're not really sure what monies would actually go into the account that's been set up to be transferred. So we will take a look at that, and we can do that on as the bill passes toward Ways and Means, if you'd like.
I think the point is that this committee's job is to sort of outline the policy, and if Ways and Means thinks that there's a better way of handling the transfer of funds and the money issues, they're free to make that change. They're not free to muck around with the policy, but they're free to make those other changes.
And, Mr. Chair, we're happy with that. We don't intend to slow this down at all.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else for these two? Representative Berger?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the dash A4 amendments to House Bill.
It's actually just four.
Okay, the dash four. I'm sorry, amendments to House Bill 4177.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves the dash four amendments to House Bill 4177. Is there any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? No objection. The motion carries. Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4177 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves House Bill 4177 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral by prior reference to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion? Any objections to the motion? Motion, no objections. Motion carries. The bill goes to Ways and Means. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4177. And that's it for today, isn't it? Colleagues, stay close to your phone and the calendar. You never know when we're going to be called back to do something on short notice with other committees closing. We have big chunks of the day that we can use. And with that, committee's adjourned.